Number two on iTunes pop charts, like top 10 Billboard, like top, like, charting, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And now it has what? I mean,
11 million
on Spotify.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And it's like the cool thing about TikTok is like it's really direct to listeners. Mm. And like, you know, I didn't really get much playlisting for that song,
right,
if anything. So it's been like entirely just organic.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.
Organic.
What's going on? Welcome to season two of the New Music Business Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2021. This first episode of the new season is with Mothica. She is an incredible artist in the pop realm. She kind of blew up in 2020 from TikTok, and she's one of those crazy TikTok success stories. Now, she's been an artist. She's been releasing music for about 6 years now, and she released her debut album in 2020. And we talk all about that. And kind of the pandemic and the quarantining and everything got her to try out TikTok. And she exploded from there. And I'll let her tell you the story of how it all happened and what happened since then. We recorded this outside in person in December, socially distanced. We were very, very, very careful. We were wearing masks as we were setting up and tearing down. We took them off only for the interview. We sat actually about 10 to 15 feet away from each other and was outside. So we made sure that we were being very safe. And yeah, she is a great artist who has a incredible story, and we touch on it a little bit. But after her song went viral on TikTok, it also went crazy everywhere else, and she got 25 million streams on just Spotify in 2020. She has around 1 million monthly listeners on Spotify, and she hit number two on the iTunes pop charts from that song, all from TikTok, really. And what's so interesting is she's not really on any official, I think she's on one or two official Spotify playlists that aren't really doing much, not really driving that much traffic, but she's got 1 million monthly listeners and a lot of real fans, and she's selling a boatload of merch. She funded a very high production value music video based on her merch sales, and she talks about how she did that. So this is a really interesting conversation. If you are deciding to explore TikTok or trying to figure out what that means, or if you wanted to integrate it into your strategy, or even just want to learn about it, you're going to really enjoy this interview. As always, please follow and subscribe to the show. However you're listening to this right now, please pause, hit the subscribe button, hit the follow button. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. That really helps. And if you're watching this on YouTube, after you listen to this, please comment on the video. That super helps. You can find Mothica on Instagram at Mothica. On TikTok, she's Mothica Music. And on Twitter, she is at Dear Mothica. Find her in those places. As always, you can follow the show on Instagram or Twitter at Ari's Take. And remember to sign up for that email list. If you're not already on our email list, you're missing out on some very important information that we send out, that I send out, any of my current musings on the industry or anything that I'm learning. Go to aristake.com and sign up on that email list. All right, let's kick into the show. This is great. You're one of the first humans that I've seen outside of my quarantine in a long time. So this is great. How have you been the last 9 months it's been now, or however long it's been? Like, how has quarantine been for you creatively, emotionally, professionally?
Well, the quarantine started with a canceled tour. Yeah, so I was going to be in the East Coast. And
did you get any of the shows? Were you able to do any of the shows?
No.
Okay.
Which I'm glad I wasn't already there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, and then I went back to my parents' house in Oklahoma for 6 months.
Okay.
And didn't make any music at all and felt awful. And then it's funny enough that like I started making TikToks to like not focus on music, and now it's like during quarantine is when I've had the most like fans and listeners.
So it's kind of a blessing in disguise that the tour got canceled and that you were forced to entertain yourself or figure out something, and you dove into that TikTok rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Were you a user, like a consumer of TikTok before you were a, what do you call it, a creator, I guess?
I had it, but I didn't look at it for like 6 hours a day like I did in quarantine. So, yeah.
Okay. Right, because that is a big part of your story now.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you're the artist that blew up on TikTok. And when people talk 2020 music, TikTok stories, your name always comes up. And that's kind of what catapulted Vice's.
Yes.
So talk about that a little bit. So you got on TikTok in, when did you get on? Like March, April?
So I started in April.
Okay.
I started in April with like 800 followers, and kind of, it's like a learning curve where I was like making weird videos that like did not make sense at all on the platform until I kind of learned to what other people do is like use sounds and
It seems like that shifts almost every day and they add new features.
Oh, yeah.
And so to like stay up on that, like when duets came and when they're, you know, all of that, there's like all these new interesting features. And like, I still feel like I'm a grandpa. I'm not. So I technically, I think, have 4 accounts on TikTok because
I keep
getting locked out of them.
Oh,
and I can't figure it out. And so like, I don't have my username of Ari Herstand because somebody grabbed it. I don't know why. I did the login through Facebook, which got me like my Facebook name, which was Ari Seth Herstand. But then I couldn't get back into that. Then I'm somehow registered through, I want to say email, but I don't know. And I'm like Ari_Herstand. But then I got locked out of that, and I tried to do the password reset, and like the email they say is not registered. But like, I for sure you're sending me. So I'm like, I feel like I'm very out of the loop, but I still go on to kind of check out a bit to learn.
Yes,
but it's hopeless for me to even try to start posting and all that stuff. But so
you should.
I should.
Yeah, you should.
You think? Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that because I'm on the fence when it comes to TikTok. I mean, I've seen what it's done for you and it's incredible.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess let's go there. So would you advise musicians to start using TikTok? And if so, like, what is even the, like, where would you start with them? What would you tell them to do?
Yeah. Well, I think it depends on what kind of musician you are.
Okay.
For me, I usually tell the backstory of songs, or I'll have the audio playing, and then I'll have little bubbles pop up and say what the lyrics mean to me.
Cool. I love that.
I think a lot of musicians do well if they, like, cover songs or they sing a live performance of their song.
Cool.
Yeah. And just, like, you can try like anything. I don't know. That's what I do. It's like my content's all over the place because I just do jokes sometimes.
You had a series going where there was a yellow duck as a tea kettle or something. What was that about?
Yeah. So, my mom gave me this duck shaped kettle.
Uh-huh.
And I just randomly decided to show it to the internet, and of course the internet likes that more than any other video.
It blew up. I was like looking like there's 3 million views on this duck.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So that's right. But what's also so interesting though is that Vices blew up as a song, like you were just listening to the song in your car, listening to a master. The song wasn't even out.
Yeah.
And so you're listening to the song, and then that just what happened? Like, tell me about that process. So you had like 800 followers, but like, how does that go to 5 million views?
Well, I don't really understand the algorithm sometimes, but basically I listen to my mastered songs in my car, and it got really emotional, and I was like, it was like sunset, yeah. And I posted a clip of a different song a few days before Vices.
Yeah.
Same setting, same everything, and you know, it got like 50,000 plays, and I don't know why, but I just felt compelled to share this other clip from that same, it was like a whole video, and it was like minutes long.
Huh.
And I just shared this other little clip, and it was like in the middle of the song. And I think the fact I'm emotional in it and the story of it is what people liked. But I honestly don't know why an identical video of a different song didn't work.
It's so interesting. I've heard a few artists talk about that where similarly, they'll have something go viral on TikTok. They have no idea. We're like, yeah, this just got 300,000 views in like a day, and I have no idea why. Mm-hmm. And so the algorithm kind of grabs that. And that is what's so cool about TikTok versus Instagram or, you know, Facebook or even YouTube, is that you don't even need to have that many followers for the algorithm to pick it up and just like shoot it off into the space.
I actually heard that your followers don't actually matter to the views.
Wow.
And it's all based on the video itself.
Yeah.
Because I don't have consistent views on all my videos. You know, sometimes it'll be a million, sometimes it'll be less than 10,000.
Yeah.
And it's all the video itself is what, matters. So
what was that like? When did you notice that something was happening with that video on TikTok?
Well, in the first few hours, it got 80,000 plays, which I thought was I thought that was crazy, and I was telling everyone. And I mean, I think the first night it ended at like 600,000.
Yeah,
and I was like, okay, this is big, and I rush to put it out early because it wasn't going to come out for another month.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And so, I mean, that's smart.
Yeah.
Because that was the fire that was happening right then.
Yeah.
So, did you have to change the release schedule? Did you have to work? You're with AWOL, right?
Yeah.
For distribution?
Yeah. So,
hit them up and be like, yo, we got to get this out like yesterday.
Yes. Okay. And everyone told me not to.
Yeah. Oh, and at AWOL?
Yeah. They told me not to. Right. But I was like, I've never had this happen, especially with my music. So I was like, I'm just going to try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it worked. So, and I'm like,
number two on iTunes pop charts, like top 10 Billboard, like top, like, charting, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And now it has what? I mean,
11 million
on Spotify.
Yeah. Crazy. And it's like the cool thing about TikTok is like, it's really direct to listeners. And like, you know, I didn't really get much playlisting for that song, if anything. So it's been like entirely just organic.
That's what's so cool to me is that, all right, so you're at about 1 million monthly listeners on Spotify. You have
almost
right. I looked at it right before it came. I was like, she's pretty much there.
Yeah.
But like you're on one or two official editorial playlists.
Yeah.
And that's like virtually unheard of in this day and age where someone is, and you also have like, I don't know, 50, 100 million total streams, probably more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like no official playlisting. And are there any other strategies that we're not seeing behind the scenes that you would attribute to that?
Well, I have a lot of songs.
Okay.
So I probably have like over 60 songs out that are like remixes, features.
Yeah.
A lot of my songs where I'm a featured vocalist have more plays.
I saw that, yeah.
You know, this one song, this one remix has been like, you know, still going.
Yeah.
Like years later. And I think it's like on all these like yoga and chill playlists.
People cool.
It's like background music.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
But no, other than that, it's I mean, collaborating a lot, probably.
So let's talk about collaborating because, well, for one, so do you consider your album Blue Hour like your debut album, even though you've been releasing music for like 6 years?
Yeah.
This is the official album.
Yes. So I did 3 EPs and then I was like, I can't do a 4th EP.
Okay.
Like, this has to be an album. And luckily I had a groundbreaking personal life experience of getting sober, and that inspired a lot of songs.
Yeah. And I saw, because when you mentioned collaborating, there's behind the scenes collaborating, and then there's like in front of the scenes collaborating.
Yeah.
So like you being a featured vocalist on someone else's track, that's like very public. It's like, oh, she collaborated, they collaborated, you know, working with other artists. But like, I was looking at some of the credits on Blue Hour, and you have a lot of co-writers, different producers.
Yeah.
So talk about that experience of making this record and where all these people came from.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got into the songwriting scene in New York where you just do these like blind date sessions. Uh-huh. Sometimes I write for other people, sometimes they write for me.
Yeah.
And it'll be like, you know, a producer and another songwriter usually. And yeah, and when I first started, my first EP, I was entirely like produced by me in my like dorm. And as I started working with producers that are like so much better, it just became so much easier to finish a song, you know, with other people involved. I mean, I have so many sitting songs that I won't finish because they're just done by me by myself.
Sometimes you need that other person to be like an accountability partner, to just like say, no, we're finishing this, like, let's just finish.
You know? And that energy gotta, I always want to do like have an executive producer on something, but I am in so many sessions that like it ends up that I work with so many people, and I just have to hope
the sound is cohesive.
Okay,
that's
what's
so interesting to me is this, like, I'm listening to the record and I'm also, and I'm looking at the credits, I'm like, wow, there's these are totally different people, different producers, different songwriters. It's like, how did you make the sound cohesive? Was there an executive? Was there a producer at the end that was like, all right, we're just going to tweak this stuff to make it sound like it's the same record?
Well, I guess me, because I did used to produce, like, I kind of know what I want the sounds to be.
Makes
and
sense.
Usually when I go into a session, I know, I already know what the song title is going to be. I know what I want the general sound or feeling to be.
So you're like driving the train when you get in there. So it's like, okay, we're working a song for me. And so it's very much like you're kind of in control in that.
Yeah, and with songwriters, usually my biggest thing is like needing help with like harmonies and more like technical singing stuff, because I still am such a visual artist that like I think about music and like visually, and so the technical abilities of like harmonies and stuff, I'm like, what's a third, a fifth?
So you don't have much formal training, music training.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Yeah.
So were you self-taught on piano, production, guitar? What's your thing?
I did do classical guitar in high school.
Okay.
But I don't tell people that because then they think I'm going to be good.
Yeah.
And I'm not. I can do like a scale.
Classical guitar sounds fancy.
Yeah.
<By the way. laughs>
Yeah. So, I mean, I had music experience from that. And that's actually why I started writing my own songs was I would learn little arpeggiated patterns.
Cool.
And
yeah.
I would cover acoustic songs. So.
Yeah.
And
when you, so you started writing music in high school or?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say, I mean, I've always kind of just done anything artistic or creative, in general, but yeah, music was kind of like my very secret like outlet in high school, but I wanted to go into visual art. Yeah.
That's makes a lot of sense because the Mothica brand is very visual. And it's also very honed. Like, I think you think of Mothica and it like instantly you know what that is, that the world is. And I think a lot of artists struggle with creating that world, that that, you know, branding is like the the stale marketing term for it. But like you've done such a great job of branding. Talk a little bit about kind of how you created the Mothica world and the aesthetic and all of that.
Well, it's really easy when you have an animal mascot.
The moth.
To put moths on everything. But yeah, just like my personal style and like, you know, I even in, you know, middle school when everyone wanted to be Avril Lavigne and, you know, I just never grew out of that. And so... yeah, it's just a lot of like darker imagery, and because I do like graphic design and visual art, I always am thinking about that too.
Do you do your own graphics? And
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay. So wow. I like edit videos in Premiere. I do graphics.
Wow.
I design like all my merch. It's great for me though, because I get so bored with one thing.
Yeah.
That like I could never just be a singer. You know, like yeah. I don't even think of myself as a like vocalist.
Sure.
I think of it being the everything involved.
You're the artist.
Yeah.
And all that entails. And I mean, that's so cool to know that you do your merch designs mm-hmm. and the graphics and the video editing for a lot of the stuff. So that makes a lot of sense that the world comes from that. Was there any specific, when you created the Mothica mm-hmm. world, the artist, did you like vibe board it out or like vision board or anything like that? Or
Yeah, well, I've always had like Pinterest boards and Tumblrs.
Yeah.
And honestly,
Tumblr.
I don't even think I've ever matched my aesthetic to what I want my aesthetic to be.
Uh-huh.
But I'm always thinking visually like
cool.
that for sure.
It really helps communicate and tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it what's interesting is it's like it puts it in a different category. Like just listening to the music, it's sonically very pop.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start to dig into the lyrics, you're like, oh, there's some dark shit here. And it's like, oh, this is really intense. And like, this is like telling a real story. It's just like, whoa, like what's happening with this? But that's where like then it starts, the aesthetic starts to kind of make sense with it. And it works. Whereas like, I think a lot of artists push against the branding aesthetic thing, mm-hmm. but like if you know the music only tells one part of the story, and you know sonically it only tells one part, but then you know lyrics it just tells another part. But like I really do feel this whole world of Mothica.
Well, what I just kind of dawned on me that you know I started out as more of a visual artist. Mm. So it like makes sense that like my visual aesthetic and, you know, style and everything is, I feel like I've been trying to find my sonic sound like the entire time I've been making music. Like if you hear my first EP, like even the way I pronounce words, so different. It's embarrassing.
Did you go faux British for that?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's like, you know, the indie girl voice or whatever.
Oh, sure.
Singing in cursive,
Singing in cursive.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And
do you have a ukulele for that, too?
I do have some ukulele songs.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Naturally, right.
But I think it's always been interesting because I grew up in kind of the more, like, emo, Hot Topic, Warped Tour world.
Right.
And that's my personal aesthetic, but then I love pop songs, and I love the clean, finished base of electronic music.
Yeah.
And so my unreleased next EP, I think, is like the amalgamation of those things. And it's finally like, okay, this is what I should be doing.
Yeah. And I mean, the sound is very of now. Mm-hmm. Like, it is very pop of mm-hmm. the moment, which works really well. And it's cool because, but when you have the lyrics and the stories that you're telling is what really makes it hit so hard.
Yeah.
Is because like there's a lot of songs out there in the pop realm that that have this sonic consistency, mm-hmm. I guess. You know, it's just like but when you kind of dig in lyrically, like you're telling a story that is patently you and that comes from you,
mm-hmm.
and it's like you can't necessarily lift a lot of your songs and like place it on another artist because it is so deeply you. When you were in these writing sessions, did you at times find that some of your co-writers were trying to go in maybe a more universal direction lyrically, and you're like, you know what, I need to tell this story and I need to say it this way?
Yeah, I definitely tried to think about that a little bit, just because, you know, a lot of the songs were about sobriety and getting sober and drinking. And while I left in a lot of personal details, I didn't want anyone to feel like they couldn't listen to it,
right.
you know. But, Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's always been like, I look up to songwriters like Julia Michaels,
yeah,
you know, who's so honest and raw with her story. And so I've just always tried to write about my experience. I've never written from like someone else's perspective, but I kind of want to try it sometime.
Yeah, I mean, Julia Michaels is interesting because she was a behind the scenes songwriter for so many years. You know, she wrote Justin Bieber's Sorry.
Yeah.
And so many other hits, Fifth Dimension. Like the whole thing just runs the gamut of how many hits that she had under her writing credit before she even came out with Issues or her record, all of that. And it's interesting because, yeah, when she does write for herself and has her own artist songs, those songs are her. But she's able to kind of then wear somebody else's shoes or like going and be like, all right, we're writing a song for Bieber. Let's you know, do it.
I love that. And, yeah, the few, you know, I've done some writing for other people, a lot of songs that aren't out. But I think where I usually go is like having a interesting concept.
Yeah.
And usually I work better with people who it has a slightly darker twist to it.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So the song Blackout, well, the song and the video, because the video is wild.
Oh,
let's talk
you.
About the video. It's dope. It's so cool and creepy and twisted, but so fun.
Yeah.
And first off, who's the dude who's playing? What do you call that? The Beetlejuice? It's like a blue juice?
Yes, Beelzebub.
Beelzebub, okay.
Yeah. yeah, he's like a creature actor. Previous basketball player, 6 foot eight.
Yeah. Massive.
He's great.
So he actually is that tall.
He was that tall, and then sometimes we would have him stand on a stool to be even taller.
Cool.
Yeah.
So talk about putting that video together, because also I saw how many people, speaking of collaborations, how many people were a part of the making of that. As an indie artist yourself, like how do you do that?
Well, I had the idea when I was about 3 days sober, and I had started, the song wasn't finished at all, but I started writing this kind of 1950s inspired melody about, you know, this unrequited love and the love being addiction and, you know, alcohol. And I had this idea for like the Dancing with the Devil metaphor, and I reached out to the director around a year and a half before we shot it. I reached out to the makeup artist probably 8 months before we shot it.
Wow.
And got her on board.
Cool.
And because I was just like wanted to make it happen, even though the idea was much bigger than the budget.
Right. This director, was this director a friend or were you an admirer of their work?
He directed a video for a girl named Maddie Noyes.
Okay.
And the video is kind of like zombies and, you know, it. He's very like theatrical, and I knew he would be able to do the idea well. And so, yeah, I mean, thankfully, actually, all the merch orders helped me like fund it, even though it definitely could have been, you know, have a little more funding. But yeah, I literally was trying to get people on board. I ended up, the location was Bonnie McKee, who's become a friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
So she hooked it up. It was shot at her house.
She live in LA?
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So
did you shoot that during quarantine?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool. Totally safe. And then my mom did this, like helped me do the styling and like And so the makeup artist that did Beelzebub also did my makeup. So we like pulled in a lot of favors to get that done.
So cool.
Yeah.
So okay, so you funded it with merch sales.
Yes.
Talk about that. You have a very impressive merch line. How did that come to be? I know you designed all yourself, but talk about the process of getting merch up and selling it.
Well, it's funny. My first Mothica shirt ever, like, it took me like years and years to sell. Like, no one bought them.
Yeah.
But I started at the beginning of quarantine sketching this, like, you know, fake metal band looking shirt. And I wanted merch that just like you would wear it even if you don't know my music.
Yeah, love that.
So I created this like kind of metal moth logo. And then I started bleaching them when I was in Oklahoma and sold like probably 1,500 bleached shirts.
Whoa.
That me and my mom and dad created an assembly line. And
so you actually made these shirts by hand?
Well, the shirts were printed. okay. from an Oklahoma company.
Okay.
And then we would bleach them and dry them. And
that's
yeah.
amazing.
I would never be able to do that if I was in my little studio apartment. You know, like.
Right, right. Yeah. So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, thanks, Mom and Dad.
Right. And then what was the promotion? Like, how did people know that you had him? Was it all through TikTok? Was it.
Yeah, so I think that was right after Vices came out.
Okay.
So that helped. But then I made a video like how to bleach shirts. I did a tutorial.
Brilliant.
And the tutorial, I mean, I posted that in like 700 orders like the next day. Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. I know. Oh my gosh. That's so great. Okay.
And I'm like, I'm telling you how to do it. Yeah. You know, you can do it yourself.
The tutorial was on TikTok?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So that was like you got to become best friends with the post office yeah. in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think that merch company said that it was like the second biggest order from them other than like a college. So
yeah.
it was like nice.
Wow, that's cool. What merch platform do you Shopify or what's this e-commerce store?
Now I'm with a merch company
okay.
Called Sandbag.
Okay.
And they actually like started with like Radiohead.
Oh, wow.
And okay. they do so many. They're all like, you know, in the rock and roll space. And
so they're really now cool. handling printing and fulfillment. And so you don't have to like
yes.
package and ship it out
yeah.
yourself.
Yeah, so
and
they
all
ship
that.
It
okay.
out now.
Got it.
And that's pretty new.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's so helpful.
Yeah.
We just did a review on Ari's Take on the print on demand merch
yeah.
companies, which is super helpful when you don't have to have all the inventory
yeah.
that there are companies out there. Because like with Sandbag and these other merch companies that are for like, artists of a certain level are fantastic, but not every artist is at that level. And they're just at the point where it's like, I really don't want to stuff 500 shirts in my closet because mm-hmm. I don't have that room. Mm-hmm. And I also don't want to have to make a bunch of trips to the post office. But none of these merch companies will take me. So there are some print-on-demand companies, which are really nice
yeah.
To have. And we've experimented with when tested a bunch of them out, and that can be great. Okay. So you sold a boatload of merch, which is amazing. Helped fund the video. Was
yes.
that like after you sold the merch, it's like, all right, let's go. And you called up your director and be like, all right, we can do this now.
Yes, actually. And even at the last minute, I started selling some one-of-a-kind Mothica shirts on Depop where I would find old like gas station shirts, like cheesy looking like fairies and dragons
yeah.
and just put the Mothica logo on that. And so last minute to get a little extra funding, I did that because
cool.
my idea was like, would better be suited for an actual major label budget,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I tried to get it together as I could. And
cool.
I put everyone who bought a shirt's like name in the description.
Awesome.
And yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. So have you, since everything has kind of really blown up this year for you, have you been approached by major labels?
Yes.
And what has been the decision to stay independent or
yeah.
are you going to stay independent?
I am staying independent.
Okay.
You know, yeah, it was funny. Like the 2 days after Vices came out, I was like just wall to wall with like meetings and all these labels that, you know, I dreamed of being on
yeah.
and the conversation. And I think a lot of it came down to the timing of it, and I wanted to get my album out within like a month, and I knew that if I signed, it might be pushed back,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I got this album out, but I already had plans for what I'm doing next, like my January, like the next year is already to me planned, and so I was just like, I'm going to see how far I can take it on my own,
yeah.
and if the right partnership came, possibly, but...
Yeah.
Right now, it's just me and my manager and my mom.
Right, right. How long have you been with your manager?
Oh, probably like 2 months.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And who is this manager?
Oh, his name's Danny Seelis.
Okay. And how did that relationship come to be?
Well, he used to manage Good Charlotte,
okay.
which is epic.
Cool.
But another artist, so funny, Abso Facto. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a song called Dissolve that was uh-huh. huge on TikTok. It was number one on alt radio. And I had been listening to Abso Facto since I was in high school.
Huh.
I like reached out to him for chords
yeah.
when I was in high school.
That's amazing.
And randomly when I got on TikTok and my moment was happening, we reconnected and
cool.
he was like, oh, you should meet my manager.
Ah.
So, yeah.
And that's how it happened.
And that's how it happened, yeah.
Amazing. So, have you been self-managed this whole time before? Have you had
no,
other managers?
I've had I've had like four managers.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And there was little bouts of me doing it my own. But one thing is like, I'm like kind of bad at filling people in. Like I just go.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And yeah, I do a lot of it. A lot of the sessions and the producers I meet is just usually Instagram DMs.
Cool. That's awesome. Very encouraging. And probably for the best that you didn't go with a label, because if you're go, they're wait. And you might it might have been 2 years before you got out your record.
That was another hard thing with the label conversations was, you know, I have this new song coming out in January. Mm-hmm. And I already have the date, January 29th. It's in... very important day. It's the 10-year anniversary of my suicide attempt. Mm-hmm. It's a song about that. Like, there's no way I'm putting it out any other day. And some of these labels would be like, oh, that's kind of soon. Like, why don't you push it back? And I'm like, you know, as soon as they say something like that, I'm like, nope, like, can't change that. Yeah. So hopefully I can have the freedom to do that and it'll work.
Real quick, I want to let you know about DistroKid. Well, I'm sure you already know about DistroKid, but they are partners with Ari's Take, and they are a great company that can help get your music distributed to Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, all of that. Over a million artists use DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I have distributed some of my music in the past. And something I appreciate about DistroKid as not just an artist, but someone who studies this space, is they have been one of the most innovative companies over the last 10 years. They came in and completely changed the game. One of the first companies offering unlimited uploads, and now most of the other distributors have had to change their policies to kind of copy and follow suit what DistroKid was doing, and the industry had changed, of course. DistroKid doesn't keep a commission. That means you keep 100% of your royalties and earnings from the DSPs. They also offer payment splitting. They call it splits, something that for me at this point is a deal breaker. I don't want to have to cut checks to all my collaborators and the producers and everybody else that is owed royalties and owed splits from my earnings. DistroKid will cut those checks directly. You can get them to your collaborators to sign up, and then DistroKid will cut all the checks to all your collaborators. And they were one of the first to offer that of the DIY self-service distributors. DistroKid continues to innovate. Check them out. If you need to get your music out there, DistroKid.com.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm talking to more artists, and obviously I'm a little biased because of everything that I teach and talk about and do. But so many artists are having the label conversations and deciding to continue on their own because, like, I don't really need you. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, you're promising the world, but like, my world's actually kind of okay right now, and it's growing and building, and it feels right, and I have control, and I don't have to give up ownership and all of that stuff. So you're working with AWOL as distribution, and for people who are listening who don't know, they're not a label, but they offer some label services, is what they're called. And it varies. I've talked to people like Lauv's team, where did the world for him. And then I've talked to people like me, who AWOL didn't do shit for. So it's kind of like, you know, and everyone in between.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, for one, how long have you been working with them?
I was with them for 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And... like 2 years ago, you
started
with them?
Yeah, I signed like a little distribution deal with them 2 years ago.
And what was the decision to go with them? And do you feel like it was worthwhile? And are you sticking with them?
Well, I have to give them props for taking a chance on me.
Cool.
And helping me out financially for a little bit.
Okay. So it was like an advanced style.
Yeah, it was like a second tier deal.
Yep.
That helped a lot. But I would say a lot of the opportunities that happened were from social media and not from anywhere else. So it's just like,
So, let's back up a little bit too, because most artists who are totally independent, who, you know, they're not getting offers for even advances from distributors or anybody. Where were you at the time 2 years ago in terms of like your streams or your tours or releases? Or
yeah, what's actually really funny is 2 years ago I had identical numbers on my streaming. Like,
oh wow,
I had about 25 million plays that year or whatever from the Spotify Wrapped, you know, but I didn't have any followers. Because I was doing all these songs that were like my vocals, but no one was following me as an artist.
Interesting.
But they were listening to my music passively on playlists.
Yeah.
And so now I'm like back to that, but people are following me as an artist, which is like shown like how much that matters, you know.
That's such an important point, because I think we're so obsessed with the numbers these days and the vanity metrics of everything, and like they only tell one part of the story.
Yeah,
that's so interesting that 2 years ago your numbers were the same as they are now, because it feels like your whole world blew up this year.
Well, it went down and then it went back.
Yeah, it went down, sure. Yeah.
And I got back to where I was.
Right. Well, but that's like, but now they're real fans.
Yeah.
Whereas before they were just, like you said, passive listeners, which is such an important distinction, because you probably wouldn't have sold 700 t-shirts in a day two years ago.
No, not at all.
Right.
Oh, I played a tour and I couldn't play one show because no one came.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so encouraging.
It was great.
Yeah. We've all been there. Cool.
But it looked better on Instagram, but no.
Yeah, right. But
like, I didn't tell Instagram. Well, actually, now I would tell Instagram that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the difference is then is I was an artist that had more mystery to me, and I liked that polished look.
Yeah.
And now what I've found is the more honest I've been, the more I've connected with people.
That is, I've noticed that from you, is that you are very open.
Mm-hmm.
And even though you do have such a distinct aesthetic and brand, if you will, you seem that's what seems like why so many people connect with you on such a deep level, is that you are so open about it. I mean, you're very open about your history with drugs and alcohol, your suicide attempt, all of that, you know, being sexually assaulted when you were young, like a young teenager, from your church pastor. Like, this is all stuff that I learned from watching various interviews or your little mini documentary that you made for Blue Hour. And talk about that experience of being so open, because not every artist is that open when it comes to those like really intense, serious, challenging personal topics.
I think maybe it's a way I cope with things, is just laying it all out on the table.
Yeah.
And I've kind of always been that way, even in high school. I was, you know, making vlogs and blogs and writing my thoughts like a diary to the internet.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like I've even been better at talking to strangers about my personal life than, like, you know, one-on-one like conversations. And a lot of it is like wanting to share that story, because I'm constantly in awe of how far I've come given my circumstances or where I was. And, you know, I've always had that drive because of those things that like happened.
Yeah.
And then also some part of it, I think, is like wanting to be as open as possible so that if anyone were to throw that in my face, it wouldn't hurt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. When you kind of started as Mothica the artist, was that a part of your story from the beginning, or was that something that you separated for a while, like with your private blogs or vlogs or something, and then as the artist you're like, well, I'm over here now? Or
I always talked about the suicide attempt, and every year I'd make a post about that.
Yeah.
But I never shared about any, you know, a substance abuse, or, you know, because I was in the middle of it.
Sure.
You know, if anything, I was trying to hide it. But I never shared that until basically I started deciding that I wanted to quit drinking, and I started being really honest with myself and seeing that the reason why I even got to that point, well, one, I think genetically I have addiction, but why I was even led was because of my upbringing. Mm. And like, I wanted people to kind of understand that, because I saw videos of someone talking about their experience, and that's how I learned what mine was.
Yeah.
You know? Wow. And I like, there's like a language that you learn from other people telling their story that then they can maybe find something in their story that makes it make sense.
Yeah. That's great. Have people reached out to you who are struggling and say that hearing your story has, you know, made them think differently or try certain things or anything like that?
I've received so many messages of people that have either, you know, gotten sober or maybe been assaulted, and they tell me that they relate to that. And now I'm trying to work on, you know, involving more of my listeners and like upcoming projects, because I can't like respond to everything.
Yeah.
And I want to like showcase and, you know, highlight their voices and their experience, because that's what's crazy is like, you know, you don't meet a girl that hasn't had a negative experience, you know, with a man like growing up. Like, it's just so common. But yeah, it's really like, I mean, I like cry reading my messages all the time. I have to like not read them.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot. Yeah.
Right. Do you think about that when there's like, you're about to go into a session, you're like, you know what? I'm not going to open Instagram right now because I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't want it to affect this going in. Or on the flip side, let me read all my DMs before this session because I need to open up.
No, I haven't done that, but there's definitely some sessions where I'll want to write a song about something really personal.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I actually want to go into that today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're like, tell me about it. I'm like, no, never. Well, let's write about breakups.
Right. Right. Do you have, when you're doing those blind date writing sessions in New York, was it the like first half hour just talking and getting to know each other kind of thing? Okay.
Yeah. And with Vices, there's the whole page in the, I think I shared this on Instagram, of like the little notes of when I was talking, and we were writing down like little phrases.
Cool.
Because I knew I wanted a song called Vices. Mm-hmm. I tried to write a song called Vices many times, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, like it kind of started because I was like, yeah, well, I don't drink anymore, but now I'm addicted to dating, and I'm going on like so many Tinder dates before quarantine, like, you know, I'd go on like two in a day, like meet someone for coffee.
Wow.
Yeah. And, or I started playing Candy Crush Saga, like obsessively. And, I was like, oh my God, I'm just replacing it with something else.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So with Vices, I think I counted 5 co-writers on that. Is that right? Does that sound right?
So there was 2 songwriters, and then there was the producer who did the first session, and we made like the beat was very different.
Okay.
And then we took it to another producer named David Burris, who's done a lot of my other songs.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so they both have songwriting credit on it.
Yeah.
Right? I was like just looking at the Spotify credits, and it listed all of them.
Yeah.
Both the producer. Anyway, so when I guess with that session, like how does a session like that, for people that don't do a lot of those kinds of sessions where they're writing for themselves necessarily, maybe they're going to write for, like, how did that work? Do you go and you have a producer, you had, was there another songwriter in the room with you at the time too? There's like 3
Yeah,
of you,
so there was 2 songwriters, Becca and Eva, and then a producer named Jack, and we were like in his living room. And I was talking about the Vices and the concepts, and we started out with like, I feel like I'm just passing by. And he was creating a beat while we were like kind of singing the song. It's like, it's hard to even remember like the exact order of it, but.
Is that how it typically goes? Is that when you do a session, you're always with someone who is, what do they call it? Control, like in the driver's seat behind the computer, making the beats as you're working on it. Do you always kind of write that way?
Sometimes they'll have something they've already made.
Okay.
But yeah, I prefer to like hear some of the sounds to inspire me. Like I very rarely like just write sitting at a piano or on guitar.
Okay.
A lot of it's like the production is happening while we're writing it.
When you're writing on your own, will you pull up a production idea that you've done or something that someone has sent you or break out a session that you did? Or what's that process like?
Yeah. If I'm writing, if I have like a piano, I will write over the most basic chords you've ever heard.
Yeah.
And what I started doing actually in quarantine, I have a song coming out called Buzzkill. Mm-hmm. And I wrote the original idea over like a random YouTube beat and then completely changed it.
Yeah.
But I'd never done that. And I heard another artist that had done that. And, you know, it worked out. Now I'm like one of my favorite songs.
Cool. So then how did you create, when you met up with the producer for that, were you like, hey, so this is my demo. We don't have the rights to, or it's like this random YouTube thing, or how did the.
So I ended up like singing, you know, recording myself singing the lyrics.
Okay.
And then I sent the acapella to my producer. So like he never even really worked with the beat.
Cool.
But I wrote it over the beat. Yeah.
That's a great songwriting tactic and technique.
Yeah.
I love hearing what tricks that songwriters use sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like I was Dan Wilson, who co-wrote Someone Like You with Adele.
Cool.
He's the original guy. So he's a singer on Closing Time. So his band Semisonic back in the day did Closing Time. But now he co-writes with everybody. He's got Taylor Swift cuts. He's got John Legend cuts. Someone Like You, which is going to pay for the rest of his life. but what he was saying, he was doing this. He does this words and music little sharing session sometimes just for a few people. And he was saying, he's like, oh yeah, so this song came from a Coldplay song. And he's like, how I do it is like, if I need some inspiration, I'll start playing their song for a while and I'll learn the song. I'll just start playing their song. He's like, if I play their song long enough, it ceases to become their song and starts to become my song.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm like, if Dan Wilson can do that, so can I. And I'm going to try to do that too. And that's another like really cool technique that tends to work sometimes if the inspiration's not there. And so I love that you just kind of pulled up a YouTube beat and it's like, all right, let's use this as inspiration. So
And I can't remember what it was called, but it was like, you know, guitar, you sad guitar, emo pop song, you know?
Yeah. Do you ever get in touch with that person who made that and be like, hey, just want to know you really inspired me one day?
Okay. No.
But you don't want to get a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Sure. That makes sense. Cool. So, where are you at now with everything? The album is out. You've been putting out music videos. I'm curious, well, actually, what was the release strategy? I saw you release like 7 singles before the album.
Yeah. So there's a band called Oh Wonder that was doing like a single
that.
A month for a year. And then at the end, it was the album.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, you know, when my singles always performed better than the, you know, songs on the EP. So I kind of just wanted to let each song have its own moment. And a lot of that was me finishing the song right before I put it out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My first album was not the most planned out process of all time. But it's funny, I had the title Blue Hour for like years and years before it had came out. So, yeah, so I did the singles thing. And then finally wrapped it all together and put it out and still waiting on the vinyl.
Okay.
That's something I won't do again.
It's
vinyl actually takes a really long time. Okay.
So long. You really have to plan for that.
I did not plan for that.
Yeah. So are they going to be shipped now to your merch company? Or are they going to be shipped to you or to the person who ordered them directly?
I think they're going to be shipped to the merch company and then go through
that's
there.
Helpful.
Yeah.
Cool. That always takes a while. There are vinyl print on demand companies too. Like there's this company, there's a few of them now. One called Crates, Q-R-A-T-E-S. That's been around for a while. They initially started as like a crowdfunding for vinyl kind of thing, meaning like you set a minimum of like 100, and if you get more than 100, they'll make it, and then they'll ship them, print them, and ship them directly to people. If you only reach like 70, then you don't get it. Kind of make or break. But now they're just like a print-on-demand vinyl, which is great for people who, you know, don't want to actually or don't have the money to order, you know, 1,000 in bulk or whatever.
But, I'm doing a super small quantity.
Okay, yeah.
But I ended up designing the whole layout and everything myself.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Everything. So if there's typos,
on brand, right.
That's on me.
Cool. So when you were planning this release for the singles and then the album, at that time, did you have a manager or a collaborator, or were you just doing that all on your own and mom?
I was kind of in between management at the beginning of the album.
Okay.
Actually, I kind of stopped working with my manager at the very beginning of the album. When I stopped drinking, I started, like, before I stopped drinking, my releases were, I feel like, very shoddily put together, and I didn't care that much. I mean, I cared, but when I stopped drinking, I really took control of everything, and like I became way more productive, way more involved. There's a little bit I didn't have a manager, but I mean, like, everything changed in my life, and I've like never had more energy.
Yeah, what was the strategy of like each of those singles? Like, what do you do other than upload it, like create the cover, upload it to AWOL, and like just post about it when it comes out? Like, what was your strategy?
Yeah, so the little mini doc was I put out before the songs, I think.
Cool.
That I really wanted, you know, a little thing about me and about all the things that really make me and why this album is so important to me in one place.
Yeah.
And I got to shoot that in my hometown.
It's so well done.
Oh, thank you.
Who did that Blue Hour mini doc?
So it was directed by Hunter Lyon, who's gone on to do some really great videos for like Mark Hoppus and Black Bear.
Cool.
The video was basically like produced by me because it was in my hometown. So all the locations, it was like my old high school, I had to get them. And the house I grew up in, like, had to let me back in the house.
Yeah.
So that's
crazy.
Yeah.
And was that your church that you grew up in too?
No. Okay. Yeah.
I'd imagine they would not want you telling that story.
That was the most difficult part was because I wanted to share my experience with the church and how, you know, basically that I was, you know, assaulted.
Yeah.
There was no church that I was going to be able to shoot in, especially, and tie that. So we found an abandoned church in the middle of Oklahoma.
Wow.
Like, in this tiny town. Mm. And actually, like, it got demolished the day after we shot in there.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, were you there for the demolition? That would have been, like, therapeutic.
It was swarming with wasps.
Wow.
And yeah, so it worked out because I was like, I don't know how I'm going to tell this story. And,
sure.
You know.
Yeah. Interesting. So that was really cool, that mini doc, and you learned so much in such a short period. It's like
three minutes.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you had that before the first single,
or I was think the, so.
Right
yeah, yeah. It was okay. Like I'm pretty sure it was like the Blue Hour like album trailer.
Yeah. And were you releasing a single a month? Was that how you were doing it?
About a month or like 6 weeks was the plan. And it was kind of just going based on like gut of what song felt like it should come out next.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then were you working with a publicist or anything at the time?
No. I really don't. I've worked with a few publicists.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I would usually just send emails myself.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. It's great. And that's worked for you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually when I have time to do it.
Right.
But
right.
I didn't get like many blogs. Actually, it was amazing when Vices came out. BuzzFeed reached out and I got to do a feature with that, which was like amazing. Like, I didn't even have to beg them to listen to my
music.
I was
wondering how that came to be, because that was a really cool piece that kind of showed, because like, she blew up on TikTok and that's on Billboard charts.
Yeah.
So, cool. So, I mean, it's funny how like it just happened organically, that TikTok, that wasn't part of, because right now in every label marketing meeting, TikTok is mentioned. They're like, yes. All right, what's our TikTok strategy? We're going to dump $100,000 into influencing your campaigns, blah, 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 you know, whatever. Like, you've never, I mean, it goes without saying, but just for the record, you haven't, like, paid influencers or paid anybody to promote stuff on TikTok, have you?
I have paid, I got a girl to make a custom Furby.
Ah.
A TikToker.
Uh-huh.
And so she made a TikTok about the Furby based on my album.
Amazing. Okay,
that was
cool.
My marketing idea.
Yeah.
Did it,
was it worthwhile?
Actually, yeah. Like, okay. It got like 500,000 views.
Her video?
My reaction to it. Yeah.
Amazing.
So it's like this naked, it's like a naked Furby that's blue and has tattoos. Yeah.
Okay. This is not to be confused with the one that you made in high school that was like, or
that's
college.
Another Furby moment. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a thing with Furbies.
I love Furbies. Yeah.
Right.
They're just so weird.
Right. Got it. Okay. So that is interesting. So, but were you kind of already established a little bit on TikTok when you hit her up? Or was this
Yeah, I just hit her up, commissioned her to, like, make the Furby.
Cool.
And, you know, she sent it to me, and I made some videos with it. And then I did a thing called, like, the Pass the Vice Challenge, which I asked a bunch of creators to, like, catch something in the air and then drop it of what their vice was. And sometimes it would be, like, a Nintendo Switch, and then sometimes it would be, like, a pack of cigarettes.
Mm.
And that was all just me messaging people. And asking them,
Just asking.
Yeah. It was, like, amazing. It worked out right when that moment was happening.
Mm, cool.
But that's the thing, like, the song didn't, like, really become a TikTok song, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it only has probably 4,000 videos made with it.
Yeah.
But what's amazing is people listen to the song outside of the app, so.
Right.
But, yeah, it's just, like, trying anything and seeing what sticks. I mean, I watch so many videos and kind of learned what other people were doing.
Mm. So if an artist is like, all right, I'm going to release my album or I got some singles coming out, I want TikTok to be part of the strategy, what would you recommend to them that they start with or that they do? Let's say they're not even on TikTok yet. Or what do you recommend?
Yeah, I think what I always think about is what is something I can, like, give back to people that are watching. Mm-hmm. So, like, with the I've done behind the scenes of how I got this shot.
Yeah.
Done a little tutorial.
Cool.
I've shared what the lyrics mean to me.
Yeah. That's what's actually really cool and surprising to me, and I wonder if you've thought about this much. The videos of what we could be called, like, sell, like, promotion, where really you're focused on your music or talking about your music, actually do really, really well and seem to get a really good response. And even some of the ones that are, like, more TikTok-y sometimes don't get as good of a response as, like, your ones that are focused on the music, where it's, like, almost the opposite on a lot of other platforms. Whereas, like, when you're posting, like, you know, about the new song on Instagram, it's just like, okay, you know, 100 likes. But then when you, like, post a really crazy photo of yourself, or it's like 1,000 likes, like, wait, what? Like, come on. Like, I spent my whole life, my 3 years working on this record, and, like, nobody cares. But so how does that, like, have you thought about?
Yeah, definitely. I think what I've learned is, you know, TikTok really gravitates to, like, very raw videos.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be fancy lighting at all.
Yeah.
Very authentic, you know, storytelling, I guess.
And talking about your music is authentic to you.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Cool. But, you know, if I post a clip from the music video, no one watches that.
Wow, that's so interesting.
So it's like, yeah, it's
sense.
It really rewards, like, even, like, I've noticed a lot of the most popular TikTok videos are either people in their car just talking or, like, in front of a mirror and holding their, like, phone up.
Yeah.
And I think something is very, like, relatable about that setting that feels like you're absorbing information, I guess. I don't know.
Cool. Would you recommend artists these days, if they do have a little bit of a budget, to go the hiring, like, paying influencers on TikTok to do that? Or have you found that that isn't as effective?
Try it. Definitely. I think coming up with some little clever idea for what it could be. I haven't had, haven't really done anything for my songs, but I see it working a lot for like Upsol, her song Drugs. I don't know if you know it, but right now it's having a moment because there's this one filter that perfectly matches up with the lyrics.
Oh, wow.
Like the delay of the filter matches up with the song. Mm. And it and
crazy.
Yeah.
That's like Wizard of Oz, Dark Side of the Moon, how they match up if you play at the second line.
I know.
Line,
I was like, do I have a song that does that? No. Right.
That's the 2020 version of Dark Side, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Cool. When your TikTok filter matches up with your lyrics. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is so interesting, just like how the trends shift and evolve so quickly. Because I've heard both ways. I've heard some people say, unless you have $100,000 to spend on TikTok influencer marketing, it's not worth it. But then I've also heard people that, you know, are having success, you know, more so just like, I guess, kind of organically growing it themselves.
Yeah, I think if you have the budget to try it, because you never know
what
it could do.
Mm-hmm. Do you just message other people directly? Like, do you find them on Instagram and DM them there?
Sometimes. I mean, luckily, because I'm verified on Instagram, I ended up being verified on TikTok. Uh-huh. That helps a lot.
Cool.
One thing that actually helps a lot is I comment on a lot of videos and either say something funny or whatever. And I mean, comments can go viral. Like, there can be 50,000 likes on a comment, you know?
Wow.
And
cool.
Yeah.
That's a great strategy, actually. That's a really good tactic to start with. Yeah.
And people will be like, I think people will always be coming like, I see you everywhere. I'm like, yeah.
Nice. That's smart. And I've also seen you jump on some of the sound trends once in
a
while.
Yeah.
Have you found that kind of works a little bit?
I think that's super important.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some musicians like only post their music.
Yeah.
And because it's not a recognizable sound in TikTok, like the algorithm won't push it.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to like intersperse it with popular sound trends. And, you know, sometimes I'll just have an idea for whatever is happening at that moment. And
cool.
Do that.
Right. It's great. Awesome. Well, this is so interesting. I have one final question that I ask everybody who comes on the show. What does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
Ooh, that's a good one. To me, to make it like understood by other people, or like to me personally?
To you.
Okay. To me personally, it's to be able to pull off my ideas and financially be able to do that.
Cool.
You know, one thing, my biggest, you know, goal right now is to make really compelling music videos and these concepts and these merch items that maybe you can't find easily. And to be like respected that like I can have this idea and I can make it happen. Mm. That's like all I've wanted.
Yeah.
So
cool.
Luckily it's starting to kind of happen.
Yeah. I love it. Amazing. Yeah. Mathika, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features. Annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out DistroKid.com.